I am Sonia. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, guys. Tonight we have a really cool speaker. We have Tim A. from Visalia. He just celebrated 10 years of continuous sobriety on the 25th of this month. So congratulations, Tim. I asked him how it felt to have 10 years. And he said, he's like, yeah, it feels good. And then I asked him a bit more. I was like, you know, so how do you, like, what exactly does that feel like? Because for the newcomer, it's hard to fathom having just even one day of sobriety. And he said, just doing the one day at a time thing, days turn into months, which turns into years. And before you know it, you've added up quite a few. You stacked up some years. And I also got to ask him what the secret to sobriety is. And he said, there is no real secret. He said, nothing is hidden in this program. The design is already laid out for us. And he follows the one day at a time. And he has a constant contact with his higher power. So whether that be through simple and short prayers or even a thank you prayer, he says that when he doesn't make contact with his God, it really shows. When things aren't going right, he's probably not making that contact. I also asked him what his higher power looks and feels like, and he said, all forgiving, my higher power listens constantly, hears prayers, and he often prays for others more than himself. His higher power reveals itself in all sorts of ways, like nature or a sunset. And I usually ask for advice for the newcomer, but I actually, part of his story is about relapsing, so I asked for some advice for someone who relapses. And he says, get right back into the steps. Do not hesitate for a day. That day can mean life or death. Go back through the steps again with the sponsor. Introduce yourself as a newcomer. Get that shame and guilt out of your mind. He said, it is not the end of the world if you relapse. So he asked me to keep it simple, so I'm going to stop there. I'm going to go ahead and hand the meeting over to our speaker, Tim A. from Visalia. Thank you so much for letting me be of service.
Okay, thank you, Sonia, for that introduction. I'm Tim. I'm an alcoholic, and I want to thank Bill H. and the Valley Group for asking me to speak on this Zoom meeting. You know, I spoke once before at the Creative Center, I remember. And, you know, I think this Zoom format might be a little more intimidating than for me anyways. But I hope my story helps somebody tonight if they might hear something. I want to welcome the newcomer. I want to congratulate anybody with any milestones out there, even if it's 24 hours. I got me a chip from my sponsor. This is the first time I ever got a two-tone chip, and it's got an X on it for 10 years. And my sponsor's name is Mitch K. I'm so thankful to have him as a sponsor. And I have so many friends in this program that I didn't have. I had those fair weather friends before I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, so I have true friends today. They know who they are, men and women in this program. But I'll tell you a little bit of what it was like before I got here, and you know, I'll try to get into the strength and the hope more so. But a little bit of my background. I was born in Hanford, grew up over there. My mom and my dad had already separated and divorced before we moved to Visalia. So I was probably 5 or 6 years old when that happened. I have a younger sister and an older brother and an older sister, and at the time. So there was 4 of us, single mom. And she had a full-time job working in a tough environment because it was mainly a men's environment there. She worked in the newspaper business in the production area, and she was like the only woman there making what men make, and so she was definitely not welcome there. But she worked hard, supported us, but she always wanted that father figure in our life. So I don't remember her dating very many people, but she ended up marrying a man. He was an Irishman, too. And, well, actually, he was half Irish and half Danish, you know, because his parents were from, they lived in Kingsburg. And, but he was probably a little older than my mom, but, big man, big hands, just totally, intimidating person. He smoked, and that's something that I wasn't used to being around. And he drank, and that's something I wasn't used to being around. So, needless to say, I got to see firsthand what alcoholism kind of looked like, drinking straight out of a half pint bottle. You know, he drank Coors regular and Camel non-filters and drank Jim Beam. And when he didn't drink out of the pint bottle or the half pint, gosh, he must have tucked him under his seats too. But, I grew up fearful of him, number one, and I stayed to myself a lot. You know, my mom had her hands full. My older sister, she was 5 years older than me, so she was kind of boy crazy, always had older boyfriends. So my mom was totally worried about her, setting a curfew that my sister never abided by, and just always worried about her. And then my brother, he had asthma really bad, so it was life and death with him sometimes, living here in the valley, where he'd have asthmatic attacks and didn't know if he'd make it. And then my younger sister, she was 4 years younger than me and 5 years younger than me. And she required a lot more care, let's just say that. So I was kind of the middle child, and I just didn't require as much care. But I developed a lot of head trips. And I remember I made it through, you know, elementary school, all those things okay. I think it was when I got into high school, I really noticed the difference of how different I was. But before I get to that, let me just say, I heard this person talk at the Creative Center one time, and he said what I'm about to say. And for, you know, when he said it, I identified right away. And, you know, and I thought, man, that's something I'll never say at a speaker meeting or any of that stuff. But I found that I needed to, because maybe it'll help somebody. But, you know, when I was, it was under 10 years old, you know, so maybe even up to 10 years old, but I was a bedwetter. And being a bedwetter has a stigma to it. It's very shameful, and it's very, I had a lot of shame, guilt for, if there wasn't a covering on the mattress, having to change the sheets every day. So my mom handled it really good. I didn't, you know, and it was something that I grew up in. It really did a lot of harm to me, you know. So I couldn't really go over anybody's house, spend the nights. Those were kind of out the door, of course, you know. But I ended up outgrowing that for whatever reason. They probably scientifically can say what the reason was is why I was doing it, you know. But it didn't matter if I didn't drink 12 hours before I went to bed. It was sure enough I was going to wet the bed, you know. So, so if somebody's out there that has that in their story, definitely talk to your sponsor about it. That's something that you should never carry with you. I hope that helps somebody tonight. For me, high school, I was pretty much a loner. had a couple friends in high school. I was a cross country and track person, so needless to say, those aren't really team sports, you know, so you're running on your own. You're out there by yourself pretty much all the time. So that was another thing where your mind really has, you get to really talk to yourself a lot. But in the meantime, things at home were getting worse. The progression, now I know what a progression of alcoholism is. I saw it in my stepdad. You know, he got fired from a job. Then he was unemployable. He had accidents. You know, it was terrible. You know, but my mom stuck by him, at least all the way through high school for me. And then I just told myself, you know, I've got to get out of here. I'm not going to stay in Visalia, you know, go to COS. I didn't know what I wanted to do. So before I graduated, I decided to go into the Air Force. This was back during the Vietnam War still. But I decided on the Air Force because my uncle had been in the Air Force. And I really looked up to my Uncle Frank. And, you know, so my mom signed for me because I was only 17. You know, so I needed that parent permission. So right after high school, boom, within a month, I was gone. I was gone to basic training. I was still 17. I'd be 17 till August. And so I went through basic training pretty young compared to some of those guys in there. And those guys were from all different parts of the United States. And other countries, too, would come to basic training. But that's where I actually had my first drink, because we would get a leave, you know, like the day off or whatever you want to call it. And we would go to that base, had a bowling alley. We'd have a beer. So my first real drink was a long neck Lone Star. And I didn't go crazy, didn't develop any cravings or any of that right off the bat. Even when I went to my next base in Colorado, 3.2 beer there. When I went to San Francisco, I got stationed at Hamilton Air Force Base, which is only like maybe 20 minutes outside of San Francisco. So I would go into the city a lot. And, you know, I put myself in a lot of harm's way. It was at nighttime. I'd walk by myself a lot of times there. I'd do things. I wasn't 21 yet, so I couldn't drink off base. I couldn't buy it off base, but I could drink on base still. But still, I did harmful things that I shouldn't have been doing. Let's just say that. And I got papers to go overseas. I got stationed at Kadena Air Base in Okinawa. And that's where my drinking took off, you know, away from the States. Other people in the same boat. And we pretty much would gather around each other, had a lot tighter knit bond. We would always go downtown, drink together. We'd drink on base. It was always a barbecue at our barracks. Any time of day or night, there was somebody was barbecuing and we were drinking. But I still found ways to get off base and go to places that I should, dark places, you know, just where only Japanese went to, I would go in. And, you know, so I was still doing things that could be harmful to me, but I didn't think of the consequences on that. But that's where my drinking, I became an alcoholic before I was 21. Probably 20 years old, because now that I know what an alcoholic is, where they lost the ability to control their drinking. Well, I lost that ability to control my drinking at a very young age. The only thing that I attribute my being able to hold it together was my youth, because I could spring out of bed, or I could not sleep all night, and I could put on a fresh uniform and make it to work. And so, and at work, I had a lot of my superior officers and my NCOs that were above me, that were my bosses. They loved me. They appreciated my work. I got awards there, but all in the meantime, I was definitely a I was an alcoholic, not a potential anymore. And so when it happened, it happened. I remember getting hit by a taxi. I was drunk. And I walked right out in front of that taxi and got hit. I wanted to blame him for hitting me. That never went off. And I'm glad it didn't, because it wasn't his fault. It was totally my fault. Messed up my knee. I was in a cast all the way up my thigh, all the way down to my ankle. And I was downtown the very next night drinking and running around on crutches. And it was just ungodly. Had some massive headaches. I was starting to get really bad hangovers, but I still could do my job. Came back to the States, made it through my 4 years in the Air Force. After I got discharged in Idaho, I saw my oldest sister, who's no longer with us because she died of this disease at the age of 49, and I miss my sister. I was like her. And we were rebels. And, so I come home, I come back to the United States. After the Air Force, saw my sister in Oregon, went farther south, stayed at my mom's for a little while, but she was remarried and there was no way I was going to stay there and live off them. It was like I remember her new husband, and I'm so happy she found him too, but he found me a place to live. I remember it was just a one bedroom. No, it was a one bedroom, had a little kitchen, little living room, but it was out there like across from the Sequoia Drive-In. I remember out there. But I worked at Kmart for a year. And then I got a job, a really good job at a printing place here that made yearbooks in Visalia. And I worked there for like 27 years. But I was a good employee. But in the meantime, my alcohol progressed. I could see now where my I thought good quality work was actually, I was going down. I was married at the time. My first marriage had two children. They're great kids. They've turned out really good despite my parenting. That ended in divorce. Then I got married again. This one only, the first one made it like 15 years. The second one didn't even make it 2 years. But I have a son who, he was less than 2 years when she left me, and I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. How I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I went to my employer through the employee assistance program. I went, I found a place here in Visalia. It was the Family Recovery Center, and I was able to start my treatment. And that's where we went to, they assigned us two meetings a week, actually three meetings a week, plus group. But if you had a sponsor, you only had to do two meetings a week. So I have some really good friends that I met in there. We did meetings every night of the week. I went to at least two sometimes. And that's where I started meeting friends outside the group, too. That's where I met Gia. And in the Blue Room was one of my favorite meetings on Sunday night. I just met all kinds of neat people. And, my sponsor, the first sponsor I ever had, he took me through the third step. But, the first three steps are kind of decision steps. They're not really action steps, in my opinion. They were decision steps. He took me through the third step, but then he stopped going to meetings. He went to church, and that's where he found more to his liking. So I didn't really have a sponsor for a while. I sponsored myself, which is not a good thing to do, because I really could co-sign anything, and plus I was very I didn't really do a good job of doing good homework assignments. I went to book studies, but actually to study the book It was more of read the book, talk about it. But for me, the studying of the book came when I worked with another alcoholic. And I really didn't do that until, you know, I came in 2002. Well, in 2010, I relapsed. But I was headed for relapse this whole time. I had problems before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had problems because I didn't do the steps right away, or I did them, what they say, half measures availed is nothing. Well, that's what happened to me. I just know for me, the relapse was actually the beginning of my recovery. It set me on, and the reason I relapsed was I didn't do the steps thoroughly, I didn't have a sponsor, and I didn't, or I had a sponsor, hadn't really gotten down to working with him yet, but I did the social part of the program really good, I did the service part of the program really good, but the recovery part, I was having problems with it. And when I relapsed, you know, I ended up in Cahuilla Delta Hospital. I ended up strapped down in like 5-point restraints. I had a person watching over me 24/7. And I remember my sponsor, Ricky, and my friend, Tommy. They came to see me. And Rick laughed when he came in the room. You know, and I know what that laugh was all about. It was just, you know, hey, you had to go out and do some more research, didn't you? But I was grateful to see him and Tommy, very good friends to this day. While I was in that room, this is 2010, May of 2010, there was a person next to me, and I remember a Catholic priest came in and talked to this man. I talked to the priest and I said, "Sir, could you please call such and such from a church I had only gone to maybe once?" And sure enough, that pastor came in and visited me too. So the man next to me died, you know, that the Catholic priest saw. And the pastor that came in to see me, I was very grateful. I got out of the hospital later that week and went to a meeting that Friday. And that's where I declared myself a newcomer. And for those first 30 days, I was a newcomer. And I stood up and I made sure I was there on time. And I wanted to get that, get anything out of my mind that, hey, I'm just going to sneak in the back door this time. No, there wasn't any back doors. And I started working with Ricky. He took me through the steps, had me do homework on 1, 2, and 3. I'm grateful for that. The fourth step, you know, it says to discover, uncover, discover, and discard. Well, that's what I did. You know, that action steps, I started doing the action on them. And I started getting results right away. You know, I was getting some of that off of my back that I was carrying around with me for so long. And, you know, I was grateful for that. You know, I read that doctor's opinion. We went over that too. We read the big book right from the preface through the forwards through the whole thing with Rick too. We didn't just start on 1 through 64. And I know in that doctor's opinion it talks about the mental obsession, the physical cravings, and then the spiritual malady. So I'm grateful for Dr. Silkworth and for what he put in the wrote it for us Alcoholics Anonymous book, because it told me what I am. I have a disease, and it's not going to get any better unless I do get that. I stop drinking first and get do the spiritual malady, take care of that, because I can do the other two and still be sick. You know, so that's where I'm at today. But I have those bedevilments they talk about in the big book on page 52. I'll just read this real quick, because if you can identify, you know you've had some problems too. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear, and we were unhappy. We couldn't see to be of real help to other people. Yep, that described me perfectly right there. You know, you know, so that was another thing that that I realized right away. I was having all those problems. So to correct those problems, let's identify the problem and get into the solution. And that's something I did. You know, that daily inventory it talks about in step 10, you know, I go to a men's meeting on Fridays. Right now it's a Zoom meeting, and I welcome any men to go to that. It's on Zoom right now. Again, we might start up again at the 210 Center, but I'm not ready to start with the face-on meetings yet. I'm waiting, you know, for that for the right time, but I'll do Zoom. But we start at the men's meeting, and it's a great format that Bob Key brought up from San Diego with him, and we do an opening prayer, we do the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer, the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi, which is the 11th step prayer, and then we read the ninth step promises, and we read on awakening, and so I mean we do a lot of stuff that sets a guideline for me to do during the week also, and we get to go around the room. There's over 20 guys there usually, and we're able to connect with each other. So this is what I'm trying to tell people, what I do today. You know, service work today, I'm not involved in AA service work so much. Before the quarantine, I was volunteer at Cahuilla Delta Hospital and the Tulare Library. I had two commitments at both those places. And, but right now, you know, of course they're shut down or they're not allowing us in. So I'm not able to do my service there. So getting into service in AA again will be great. I know we have the Founders Day picnic coming up, which we're not going to have because of the, you know, the quarantining. That doesn't mean we still can't celebrate Founders Day, because when Bill W. and Bob, Dr. Bob, got together, that was actually us taking off. And for me, that was that day means a lot to me. It's in June. I don't know how much time I have left. If you can kind of give me the time, Bill.
Tim, you've got about 10 minutes.
Okay, I'm going to wrap it up here pretty soon. But those are the things I'm doing today for my sobriety. Fear was a big part of my story. I took the fear out of things by not letting them build up in me. And believe me, with this quarantining, I can still be fearful because of being around, oh man, you know, because I have OCD as it is, so it just magnified it. So it's really tough right now, this time of our COVID-19 quarantining, self-distancing, that. But you know what I really found was my ego. I had to deflate my ego. I'm reading a book with my sponsor, Mitch, right now, A New Pair of Glasses by Chuck C., and he talked about ego being the roadblock to God, you know. But he said that we cannot get rid of the human ego. It's impossible to get rid of the human ego, totally. So what I have to do is keep it at a as low as I can get, not break through that wall, and don't let that let my ego drive me and prevent me from being spiritually fit, because that's what happened before. My spiritual fitness had fallen down. Today I learned, and I learned it from you guys, what you do on a daily basis. You tell me what you do, and I utilize some of those things. You know, some guys get up real early in the morning, do the readings. I'm not that disciplined. You know, I find that for me, I make conscious contact with God throughout the day. I do some readings during the day, even. I call another alcoholic. I meet with my sponsor once a week, at least once a week. We talk or text at least on a daily basis. I'd rather talk to him on a phone than text. But I know, you know, he has things to do. I've met great friends in this program. You've shown me how to do this program. The Big Book lays out the groundwork. It's a design for living for me. But you guys, like they said, the spiritual the spiritual program is not a theory. You have to live it. And it says that in the big book. So the big book for me is my design, but I got to get into action. So for me tonight, I want to leave you with this. It was something in a story in the third edition of the big book. It's in the story. And I have a friend that finishes with this sometimes too, named Carol, a great friend named Carol. But it's in the story, The Keys of the Kingdom. And the person, these are the last two paragraphs. There is no more aloneness with that awful ache so deep in the heart of every alcoholic that nothing before could ever reach it. That ache is gone and never need return again. Now there is a sense of belonging, of being wanted and needed and loved. In return for a bottle and a hangover, we have been given the keys of the kingdom. So I leave you with Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the keys of the kingdom. Thank you. Thank you, Bill.
Awesome, Tim.